So if I'm not mistaken, we left off in the middle of the biography of the Rugachar, trying to just give a little bit of an overview of his life. And I think we left off as his fame was spreading in Warsaw, and they encouraged him to be a Rav, and he attempted to open a yeshiva, and we said that was not very successful because the standards of what it meant to know to learn by the Rugachar was not realistic for most people. And John, did you get to hear the first part?
You're working on it.
Okay. That's fine. Okay, but it's fine. You'll be able to pick up. It's not going to be a problem. Okay, we ended off, I think, on the story of the fellow who the Rugachar had given smicha to many years earlier. We brought this just as an example of his demanding standards. And he was talking to him, and he said, oh, the Braisa says this. Right, or he said, the Mishnah says this. And they were talking. And at the end he said, oh, by the way, can I see your smicha? So he brings him his smicha, and he rips it up. He says, Rebbe, what was that? He said, I said it's a Mishnah. I was testing you. It's a Braisa. A person doesn't know the difference between a Mishnah and a Braisa. It's not worthy of receiving smicha from me. So you could see why the Rugachar's yeshiva wasn't exactly taking off. It was a little more demanding even than Chachmei Lublin, I guess you could say. Okay? In 1889, I'll just pick up at the last little stretch of his story. It's actually still quite a number of years, but we're going to lump together his years as Rav and Dvinsk. In 1889, Rav Aryeh Leib Smilovitzer, who was the Rav of the Hasidic community in Dvinsk, passed away. And 2 years later, the Rebbe of Kapust, who we mentioned the Rugachar had a relationship last week, told the Dvinsk community, says, take Rav Yosef Rosen, take the Rugachar as your Rebbe, he'll serve as the Rav. And that was a position he held in Dvinsk till the end of his life, for about 47 years. He was Rav in Dvinsk, and what was so interesting is there was another Rav in Dvinsk at the time. And who was the Rav of the Ashkenazic, Misnagdic community, so to speak, right? The Or Sameach. The Or Sameach. And they had a very friendly relationship. Who was older, the Or Sameach or the Rugachar? The Or Sameach was 15 years older than the Rugachar. Yeah, but they considered themselves equal. They were equally, they used to joke. Each one used to say, you know, I'm half. People said, like, oh, you're the rabbi in Dvinsk? I'm half the rabbi in Dvinsk. They saw themselves as a single unit, and they had a very very good, friendly relationship. The Kli Chemda of Meir Dan Plotsky, who was one of the top talmidim of the Avnei Nezer, used to say about Dvinsk at that time period, he said, I'm envious of Dvinsk for having merited the presence of two such great gaonim. You know, halavai, a city should be zochet to have one such personality in their city. Halachas kam v'kama, to have the Rugachar and the Or Sameach mamish in the same community at the same time, working hand in hand, was obviously a very big schus. As far as interacting, so they would only daven together once a year. They each had their own way. The Rugachar, we pointed out last week, was daven very quickly. Again, he was the Rav of the Hasidic community. It goes back to his Lubavitch roots that we spoke about last week. And we spoke a little bit about the Rugachar, his connection to Hasidus, maybe not necessarily Osik and the Svarim that we would consider Sifri Hasidus today, but he certainly had a strong connection and great respect for Lubavitch in particular, and Hasidus in general. So on Simchas Torah, they would daven together. You can imagine, Simchas Torah, the Rugachar and the Or Sameach would come together, and one of the Talmidim Muvhakim of the Rugachar said the following story that he saw with his own eyes. He says they used to, he was describing what a light moment was like in Dvinsk, right? A casual moment in Dvinsk. So he says, one Simchas Torah, the Rugachar was talking to the Or Sameach, and the Or Sameach said to him, I just finished learning whatever, particular Masechta, and a particular Rav's name appears 7 times. So the Rugachar laughed, and he said, very funny. He says, both you and I know that the sixth one that you mentioned, the sixth mention of that Amora or Tana in that Masechta, right, is subject to a matter of debate in the Girsos, and the seventh one you made up just to test me. So he called that. So this is what the students, overheard them talking. So that was a light moment in Dvinsk. That was, the type of relationship they had where they would do those types of, play those types of practical jokes on each other, tricking each other about how many Amoraim appear on a particular limut. Okay, anyways, he remained the Rav in Dvinsk till the end of his life in 1936, about 47 years. And when the Rugachar passed away at age 78, he was sick for quite a while. Rugachar, very interesting things brought down in the biography of the Rugachar, describing how he felt that those Rishonim, who he was Mizalzel, not again, he had respect for Rishonim, but he didn't learn the Rishonim as seriously as he felt that maybe he should have, because again, his Rebbe was the Rambam, right? Everything was the Rambam by the Rugachar. So he felt that those Rishonim were teaming up against him in Shemayim and causing difficulties for him. He died of a very painful kidney disease at the age of 78. And realizing he had no real options at the end of his life, he decided to go to a famous urologist by the name of Professor Manes, who was in Riga at the time, and he tried to operate, not so successful. They added Chaim to his name, which doesn't appear. Normally, if you add a name, we only keep the name if the person has Refuah Shleima. So, unfortunately, he never had that Refuah Shleima. And the last Shabbos of his life, he actually went to Vienna where he passed away. We'll talk about that in a second. But the last Shabbos of his life, he was in Riga, and they called him up for Haftorah. He was too weak to read the Haftorah, but he made the brachos, and a Rav by the name of Shalom Yaakovson read the Haftorah. It was actually Parshas Yisro. And the Haftorah, which we'll read this Shabbos, Parshas Yisro, is the sixth parak of Yeshaya, and in there it talks about in the days that King Uzziah died. And Rav Shalom Yaakovson trembled. He said he shook when the Ragachar was sitting alongside him. He was reading, right? Ragachar made the brachos, but this Rav Shalom Yaakovson read the Haftorah, and he said, seeing the king, the Sar Torah, like we spoke about last week, the Ragachar who had the respect, Man Malki, Rabbanan, right, the great king of the Jewish people, so to speak. He was very frightened that was a Siman Ra. And unfortunately, his prediction came true. The pain became unbearable. The Ragachar traveled to Vienna for another operation. And the doctors considered that second operation successful, although the Ragachar famously emerged from that room and said, the Yerushalmi was correct. Right? He felt that it was against the Yerushalmi to operate the way that they did, whatever it was. And the operation, the doctors considered it successful, but his body had just, it was, too much. And he was Nifter on the 11th of Adar. It was a Thursday. It was Tanis Esther. That year, in 1936, and he's buried in the Dvinsk Cemetery near the Or Sameach. That concludes Ragachover's life in a very, very brief, very, very brief way. Now, it's very important just to realize what we're going to transition to now, the writings and the teachings of the Ragachover. It's a mamash and nace that we have them. And it's Mesiras Nefesh of the Ragachover's daughter, his name was Rachel, who in 1940-ish, she left Eretz Yisrael. She was in Petach Tikva at the time. She left Eretz Yisrael to go back to Dvinsk to try to save her father's writings. Now, if we think about that, 1939, 1940, that's a crazy thing to do because she knew very well that the Nazis were closing in. And she wanted to do whatever she could to save. Obviously, she was hopeful she would survive. But she understood very well the risks as well. 1939, to go back to Dvinsk as the Nazi war machine is closing in, not pashut. She goes back to Dvinsk, where all of her father's, I'm not sure why they weren't being dealt with at the time. There was a 25-year-old young man who was unmarried who took over for the Ragachover. Can you imagine who took over his rabbinic post after he passed away? So there was a young person by the name of Rabbi Yisrael Alter Safran Fuchs who took over for the Ragachover. He was not married, 25 years old. He took over for a couple of years and he was working. He was a talmud of the Ragachover and he was working day and night to try to do something with the Ragachover's writings, which were very difficult. I mean, he had gemaras with margins, filled in. He had a lot of editing and a lot of work to do. So the Ragachover's daughter came back to Dvinsk to help him, and they were microfilming all of his writings. Spent all this time trying to transfer his writings to microfilm. She published a volume of Chuvos, and I think a second one on his yard site. And they were trying to get everything onto microfilm and send it to America. That was the objective. They knew the Nazis were closing in. And they kept, every week they were sending things off. Unfortunately, she died along with this Rav Yisrael Alter Safran Fuchs. They died at the hands of the Nazis. And but much of the writings made it to America. What happened when they made it to America? For 16 years, nothing happened. They ended up with some cousin of this Rav Fuchs. They ended up in somewhere in the Bronx. And it was just sitting. Can you imagine? This woman, Nebuchadnezzar, and this Rav, they gave their life to save the writings of the Ragachover, and it's sitting in the Bronx with some distant family member. Why this person wasn't trying to get it to someone? Apparently he had tried on several occasions to give it over to different people. No one wanted to, sounds crazy, but no one wanted to, the achrayas, I guess, of dealing with it. Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher was in Peoria, Illinois, and he ran into a relative who knew about these ksavim, told Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher about it, and he said, that's insane. That it's sitting there. Someone has to do something with it. And that chance meeting that's described in many svarim in Illinois led to a foundation for the writing of the Ragachover, for the writings of the Ragachover. And it's important to realize how much Yeshiva University is connected to it. Right? It was, if you open up, I have it in the base medrash, I should have brought it in just so you could see it. You open up the cover of Tzafnas Paneach on Chumash. It says on the inside cover, put out by Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak HaChanan. Dr. Belkin was very supportive of Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher's desire to put out this form of the Ragachover. They founded a some type of foundation at Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yisrael Chachanan, and they put out 13 volumes of the Rugachever's works. Then a separate machon was established in 1970 by Rav Teitz and Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Rav and Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung. They formed like an ad hoc committee to make a new machon, and they had again they had certain tzaddikim, certain Talmidei Chachamim working on the writings of the Rugachever. They put out 7 more volumes. Lubavitcher Rebbe was very supportive. We have pictures, photocopies of the checks Lubavitcher Rebbe sent to support this foundation. But it's very important to realize that, again, if not for the courageous nature of the Rugachever's daughter, his library in Dvinsk was destroyed. The Nazis came and they burnt the whole thing down. So it was only what she got out. The few mesechtas of writing that we have from him, the writings on Chumash, etc., on the Mor Nevuchim, all the writings, the Shalos and Shuvos that we have, was all to the credit of that Rav and the Rugachever's daughter. Okay? All right. So let's talk about the Rugachever's Torah itself. There's no question the Rugachever had a very unique way of learning. Rav Teitz, I mentioned last week, Rav Teitz, who put out one of the volumes in the 1980s, writes in his Hakdama, he writes about his relationship with the Rugachever. Rav Pinchas Teitz had a very close relationship with the Rugachever, like we spoke about last week. And he says, in that introduction, he's describing, people have different views of the Rugachever. It's important that people should know what he was really like. And he writes, in the second paragraph there, he says, most people see the world in 3 dimensions. Right? Physical matter, there's length, there's width, there's height. He said the Rugachever saw everything with a 4th dimension, and that is the halacha that's found in everything. This week's shiur and next week's shiur are going to be somewhat interrelated, the worldview of the Rugachever. But he saw there was this interplay between halacha and everything in the universe. And he saw everything as being guided and dictated by Torah. One time he met up with the Lubavitcher Chassid, somebody by the name of Rav Simcha Gorodetsky. And Rav Simcha Gorodetsky had come to visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was Rav Shmuel Dovber, who was in Leningrad at the time. So the Rugachever says, what are you doing here? He says, you've come to see the Rebbe in Leningrad. So the Chassid says back to him, yes, I've come to Leningrad to see the Rebbe. Did I tell the story last week? I came to Leningrad to see the Rebbe. So the Rugachever got very upset. He says, well, which is it? Did you come to see the Rebbe in Leningrad? Or did you come to Leningrad to see the Rebbe? Because there's 17 nafkaminas between the two. He says, I'll give you one. He says, go figure out the other 16 yourself. Don't be such an amaretz. Right? But I'll give you one. He says, if you came to see the Rebbe who happens to be in Leningrad, then you're putter from Sukkah. But if you came to Leningrad, and it happens to be that the Rebbe's there, then you're not putter from Sukkah. He says, there's 17 nafkaminas. That's how the Rugachever, everything was a halachic reality to him. Right? There were nafkaminas in everything in life. That was a davar pasha to him. They say a story of Moshe Prager one time was traveling, came to visit the Rugachever, and the Rugachever was escorting him back to the train station, which was also a little bit uncharacteristic of the Rugachever to take time to do such a thing. Not sure who this Moshe Prager was, apparently someone who was worthy of such an escort. And the Rugachever was escorting him, and as they were traveling, the wagon driver decided to make conversation. Right? Simple fellow made conversation with the Rugachever. So he says, Rabbi, every time I drive past the cemetery on the border of the Dvinsk community, so on the border of that cemetery there's a tree that has some nuts, and I wanted to know, what's the halacha? Am I allowed to pick those nuts that are overhanging the border of the cemetery? So the Rugachever grabs the guy, Nebuch, this poor guy, right? He grabs him by his lapel and he says, don't you understand? He says, how do you not know? He says, it's a Gemara here, and it's a Yerushalmi, and it's a Rambam. And even though the Yerushalmi has a question with the Kesef Mishnah, he's going on and on and on. And this poor guy is like white as a ghost. Until Rav Moshe Prager says to, the guy says to him, he says, Rebbe, your guest is going to miss his train. So he says, okay, no. He lets the guy go. He says, okay, no, have a good trip. But that was his reality. He couldn't fathom. How could a Jew not know how to function? How do you not see, right, everything in life through the perspective of Torah? Okay, so just as far as the Rugachever is Derech HaLimud, people wrote him letters and asked him, how should a person learn? It's a good question to ask an Adam Gadol B'Yisrael. I'll go to page 6, please, of our handout. We'll just read a little bit from 2 Tshuvos. This is in the Tzavnas Paneach, the Warsaw edition. There are many different maduros of Tzavnas Paneach. Shalos and Tshuvos. That's not going to work, okay. Of the Shalos and Tshuvos. It's fine. Of the Shalos and Tshuvos. So someone wrote him, how should one, what's the Seder Halimud for a person? Simen Hay. This is Maduros Warsaw, Simen Hay. Kibalti Michtavcha, I received your letter, Al Derech Seder Halimud. You want to know how to learn? He says, what can I tell you? Want to learn? So go learn, and you'll find out what Chazal say about how to learn. All right. What can I respond to you? Ayin nida, ayin amud beis. We're just going to get a taste here. The Rav Chaim was ayin here, ayin here, ayin here. The fact that he is mevar any of his mar makomos is like a bracha when he gives you a little bit of an insight into what he's, you know, what he's thinking. So what can I tell you? Look in nida, ayin amud beis. The Gemara says, "Ma yasa adam v'yacham." What should a person do in order to become wise? V'zera tzolomer, limud im svara v'lo pilpul. A person should learn through the process of svara, right, and not through pilpul, not through abstract pilpul, but through svara, building off of that which appears before you. V'ayin megillah daf zayin. Now, I have to point out that this must be. There's no way this is the Ragachar's mistake. This must be when whoever was copying this over. It's megillah daf vav. This Gemara that we're about to read. There's no way. I find it inconceivable that the Rav Chaim made a mistake in citing the correct daf. So let's assume that that's a copyist error. Megillah daf zayin, Megillah daf vav, really. Dilechadude mahani biyagia. To first grasp Torah takes effort. Aval leukme girsa siyata deshmaya. But if a person wants to remember his learning, so you need siyata deshmaya. So yachim nikra shneim. Right? A person who's wise has both these. You want to know how to learn? So be a person who works hard, and be a person who hopefully davens for siyata deshmaya to remember your learning. That's what I can tell you. Ayin Shabbos, daf kuf nun vav. V'zeh hageder shimush tamidei chachamim. B'kam b'komos b'shas. You want to know another aspect of being successful in learning? Shimush tamidei chachamim. As we find explicitly in that Gemara Shabbos and elsewhere in Shas. Ayin brachos daf vav. Right, etc., etc., etc. And he goes on and on with Maya Makomas. Let's just jump ahead to the end of the tshuva, where he tells us more specifically how one should learn. Okay, let's take it from the top of page 7. Let's go to the fourth line. Ba'ayin b'yavamis daf ayin b'ez, amid b'ez. Der b'yochanan lamad toras kohanim b'gimel yamim, v'svara b'gimel chadashim. The Rav Chaim says, how long does a person have to learn, and then how long does he have to process that which he learned? So Rabbi Yochanan sat down, and he learned through Toras Kohanim, through the Medrash on Vayikra, in 3 days, and then he spent three months analyzing it. So now, Chazal have given us a formula. And this is how the Rav Chaim thinks. What's the formula here? The formula is, Chazinan dahasvara tzarech lamid pamim zman alimud. Right? 3 months for 3 days. So apparently it takes 30 times as much time or energy and effort to understand something, to grasp the svara behind something, right, than to just understand very simply the words. And he quotes to Maya Makomos about that. Lachin. Kach l'mashal. Here, I'll give you an example of how I recommend that you learn. Imrotzim l'lmod seder nashim. Let's say you're working on nashim. Yilmudu t'chila b'pashut. Quickly learn through to get a basic understanding of Maseches Yevamos, Rashi and Tosfos. V'acher kach kedushin. And those two work hand in hand. V'acher kach yachzu v'lamod al svara. V'al geder the kedushin v'yibum. And then once you have the bekiyas, so to speak, of Gemara Rashi Tosos, of Yevamos and Kedushin, you'll understand the proper gedarim, the proper descriptions and definitions of the concepts of Kedushin and Yibum. V'achar kach yomod gitin v'sota. They go hand in hand. V'achar kach yachzu aleihem. And you'll understand the gedarim of gitin and sota. And then learn the darim v'nazir. V'yachzu aleihem. Then review them and you'll understand, again, the core principles of nedarim and nazir. V'achar kach ksubis. And attach that to b'metzi and b'abasra. And review them, l'havin asara. So there has to be this process of, again, like Rabbi Yochanan, 3 days of acquiring it, and then 30 times as much to really grasp the concepts. And he concludes his letter by saying at the very end, okay, then he talks a little more about this, Bekiyas versus Ian, fine. Okay, so this is his initial advice to learning. Again, quoting us the Gemaras, and then giving us a little bit of an insight into which Masechtas are paired together to understand the key principles of the Masechtas. Okay, let's look at one other letter, which actually has a very important Musar message to it, in Simen Vav, and we'll connect it to an Or Gedaliah that makes reference to this concept. Okay, it says in Simen Vav, again, Maduras Warsaw, on page 7, Kibalti michtavo, umachol lichtovlo. Right, again, what kind of question is this? You don't know how to learn, so... Right? Now, not every letter opens that way, although you could think, every tshuva from the Rav Chaim says, what can I tell you? You should know this already, but, since you're an Amara, I'll, you know, waste my time to help you out. Rav Chaim loved responding in Ksav. He would write, he'd open things on the spot, he would write. He was one of the greatest respondents of the generation. Or so they say. How should a person learn? Yomon Seder Nashim Keseder Gemarim Tosos V'Acher Kach Yachzor. Now look at what he says here. V'nei Mavur B'Toras Kohanim. Beautiful idea. The Medrash says in Parshas B'Chukosai on the Pasuk, in B'Chukosai Teilechu, the Kodesh Baruch Hu wrote Tishu Amelim B'Tor. We know the Rashi. Right, we know the Medrash. Ratzalomar Kach. D'nei Mavur B'Baba Basra. The Gemara says Baba Basra Daf Peches. D'Kumo the Eretz Yisrael Muchzekes, Hachanami Torah Yerusha Muchzekes. There are certain things that you own, in theory, but you need to do something to be Kona in practice. So the Torah is a Yerusha to the Jewish people. It belongs to us. But a Yerusha still has to undergo a process of what? Of chazaka, of taking it. Rak mikol makom tzarech halicha, de mevur beferes ha-mishnayis la-harambam zal, reish perak alat de-obasra. De-af de-kaim alan kaman damar bo-obasra kuf, de-ein halicha kona. Granted, walking is not a way to be kona something. That's only true of what? If it's not yours. But if it's yours, and we just need to be mavar which chelik of it is yours, then halicha can be a form of kinyan. Does that make sense? Am I explaining it in a way that makes sense? So Torah is what? Torah is our Yerusha. It's just a question, which Torah belongs to you? Which Torah belongs to me? What's your chelek in Torah? To be mevara the chelek in Torah, it's enough to just do what? To do halicha. And that's b'chukosai teilechu. If you just put in your effort in finding, you put your efforts here, and he says, look what he says very beautifully, you'll get kol haTorah kula. Rak b'davar chadash, that's only true for something new. Aval levar eizo chelek lezeh, kana. I'm sorry, lezek kana b'halicha. Right? But there will be mevar, which chelek is yours, you can acquire that simply through halicha. Kevan sh'atorah yerusha. Rak tzarach levar ha-chelek, right? In order to clarify which portion is yours, tzarach amel v'yegia b'geder halicha. You need to put in that effort, as I describe elsewhere in my writings, on Hilchos Trumos. Ayin Sanhedrin Tzadites, hu amel b'makom zeh, v'atorah meles b'makom acher. You put in your effort in one place, you find, you do your halicha, so to speak, in one area, and your kona, the entire property. Ayin Sham Barashi, achvatzalomer da'ayidesha amel b'makom echad, kana l'chol ha-torah af b'makom shelo amel klal. And it's so much connected to the way you saw everything. I mean, everything's interwoven. If you learn Bava Basra well enough, you'll be Kona Maseches Megillah. Why? Because it's all one. So you're holich b'makom echad, and the Torah is a poel for you in another place. V'cheinu b'Yerushalmi Bava Basra peches, meperches, mishakeach kula ratzolomar, motzei akol, kevan d'Yerushalanu rak tzarech yegia. You find everything, the Gemara says, if you walk in a particular area, again, you'll be Kona all the other areas through that process of halicha. Very powerful idea. Okay, and then he gives us again a little bit of advice at the bottom of the column. Lachin ledati yasu kach. If you want to be kona a derech halimut, here's what I recommend. Yilmudu mesechta, learn a mesechta, v'achar kach yachzru aleihem, and then review it. V'gam yilmudu harash shal mesechta, because in the rush you'll find kol kitzur shal harif, v'shar bali atosos. You'll get a real summary. The rush really sums up many of the rishonim. V'chein yachzru al harash, Esarash, ken yasu b'chol mesechta shetilmadu. V'ala mishta yamadu peres ha-mishna la ha-rambam, because the Rambam, of course, the Ragachar's Rebbe, ki umeir es ha-inayin v'limu, the Ragachar lights up our eyes, the Rambam lights up our eyes in everything that we learn. V'achar kach yasu k'mavur b'nida, then do like it says in Nida, daven to Hashem, that you should be able to maintain your learning. So two very beautiful tshuvos about how one should learn Torah. Okay, I'm not going to read the Ur Gedalia inside, although it's very kedai, but I see that time-wise, we're going to get into trouble. But there's a beautiful Ur Gedalia in the Likutei Diburim and B'chukosai in Os Aleph, where he discusses this Raga Chavar. He doesn't tell you where it is, but now you've seen it inside. He may have it elsewhere in his writings. And he talks about this, and let's just read, maybe, let's go to page 9 for 1 second. Just read one little question that's resolved with this Yisod from the Raga Chavar about Yerusha versus Yegia. Just the bottom of the first column on page 9. Ur Gedalia on page Pei. So he says, "Al pi zeh yesh letaritz kushas etosos yom tov b'pirkei avos." Famous question that many are bothered by in Pirkei Avos. What does it say in Pirkei Avos? Haskein atzmacha lilmo Torah she'ena Yerushalach. Learn Torah well because it's not a Yerusha. So everyone asks, "Hold on a second. Torah tziva lanu Moshe morasha. It is a Yerusha to us. So which is it?" So he says, based on the Raga Chavar's Yisod, you understand now. Ulefi anizkar le'el yesh lomar de'ein achanami. The nikras Torah morasha. The Torah is a Yerusha, but Avalo nikris Yerusha. right? It's a morasha, but it's not a yerusha. Meaning what? She'efshar lios shelo yirashena. It's possible that it could just pass through you without you being koneh. Again, like the guy who owns the field technically is his, but he has to do something to be koneh. There's a concern that you could just be morish to the next generation without taking for yourself. Again, you have to do the amelis and the agia and the walking through the field, so to speak, to be koneh for yourself. So that's how we can resolve this question that the Tosfos Yom Tov asked, and many others asked, but it's a good yesod to realize, again, the Torah is ours, but we have to just, take those steps to make it truly ours. Okay, let's go back to page one. This is from the biography of the Rakachover by Yair Bakharov. I think that's his name, we mentioned it last week. Okay, and he tells us how the Rakachover used to pask. Right? Understanding how the Rakachover worked and how he approached Torah, the Rakachover would often paskin straight out of a Gemara. Right? And at a bare minimum, he used the Shulchan Aruch a little bit, but many Rishonim he didn't touch. Certainly many Achronim he wasn't interested in. It says in his biography on page 1, let's take a look, page 145 from the biography. Hayusha Amru al Agon ki uposek dinim umora halacha. Bichsav u baalpe mitoch direi ha-Gemara v'ha-Rambam. Rakachover would paskin straight out of the Gemara and the Rambam. And there are those who claim he never looked at the Shulchan Aruch. Now there are many stories about the Rakachover that I believe to be true, that this author, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in anything, right? Certainly not the life of the Rakachover. This person took the time to research him and write a biography, but I think they try to cover up for certain things the Rakachover did that are known and brought in other terms that he did that are somewhat not so acceptable. So he says it's exaggerated. I don't know that it's totally exaggerated, is what I'm trying to say. To say that the Rakachover would not look at the Shulchan Aruch is not such a far-fetched statement at all based on things we find in other people's writings as well. But he gives us a more tempered understanding of what that meant. He didn't look at the Shulchan Aruch. When we just saw his tshuva, he didn't quote one Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch has Hilchos Talmud Torah. He makes no reference to it. He quotes Gemara, Rambam, right? Rambam. And that's what he does, right? The Alpiyam, turn the page 2. Lechadish es chidushav. That's, he turns to the Gemara to be Mechadish. Achanira b'chush li'itim rabos pasak agon psikos halachtios mitocha Gemara b'vad. And therefore, it is clear to us that at times, he would quote straight from, he would paskin right out of the Gemara. But again, presumably he had some awareness of the Shulchan Aruch. Hayushachelko al kviyazu. V'tanu shiachas hagon chashivas gam la'achronim k'mefarshei ha-Shulchan Aruch ach lo harei yachas shal limur kiyachas shal piska v'gam yomnam yoda hagon al pes kol ha-achronim v'yoda l'tzatetam mila achar mila. Even if you want to argue that he knew it ba'peh, some would say it's not true, he did know the achronim and he knew the mefarshim of the Shulchan Aruch, but he doesn't quote it, and he himself wrote in the closing paragraph of that section, Yadati. Shiyimsa kamastiros alzemi divrei poskim nishmasan eden. I know you'll say that based on what I'm writing you in this tshuva doesn't fit with certain poskim. So he knew the poskim. Aval ein ani rak mevaru masik l'shita al pishas v'yushami l'fidaiti. But I don't need to quote those poskim because I'm giving you my understanding at the shoresh. I'm taking you back to the source, to the Gemara, to the Yushami. Uvamakom acher, kosef agon. Ein lanu lahosev al divrei rabbeinu ha-Gemara v'yushami v'tosefta. We don't need to add on anything to what Chazal have already revealed to us, at its source. Rak lahavin divrei, we need to understand the words. And I guess he felt, I understand better than anyone else. V'lo nisa panim l'shumad n'bolam. I don't need to favor anyone else's interpretation over mine. Tells a story at the bottom of the page here that a fellow once came to him and he wanted to look up something in the Taz. So he thought he was looking on his bookshelf. Rakachover said, I don't have a Taz. He passes him a little Shulchan Aruch that was printed without any of the Mefarshim. So if he was Ma'ayin Shulchan Aruch, it was just Shulchan Aruch. I mean, that's as far as he would go. And at the bottom, tells a little story that even Psukim in the Torah, if you asked him where a Pasuk is found, he would quote you the Gemara. And of course, the author says it's not that he didn't know Tanakh, but his worldview was taken from the Gemara, from the Rambam. That was, in his mind, the Makor. Okay, just to give you an example of how this plays out, an example of his Psak Halacha in a somewhat radical fashion, how he passed straight out of the Gemara. Go to page 5. Please. Okay, page 5 is from Rav Zevin's Ishim Vishitos. And he gives us one famous example of the Rakachover paskening straight out of the Gemara. Someone asked the Rakachover about saying Tefillas HaDerech when you're traveling by plane. Does one recite Tefillas HaDerech? Okay, separate shaila, about Birchas HaGomel, maybe related. Okay, so he says, the Rakachover responded instantly, and here's what he said. Gemara mefureshes hi b'chulin. Right? Just a funny lashon even, right? The question of Tfilas HaDarach on the airplane is a Gemara Mefurash is in Chulin. Really? I didn't see that, I didn't catch that Gemara. He says, yeah, it's Mefurash. Why? The Pasuk says, a person is walking and he comes across a Kansipor Lefanecha Baderach. You stumble upon a bird's nest on the Derach. Says the Gemara, Matza Kan Bayam, a cane, sorry, cane. It's Kan in the Pasuk, it's cane. It's based on grammar, so it's cane. Matza Kan Bayam, if you find a bird's nest by sea, Chayav Bishiluach. You have an obligation to send away the bird. I know it's saying Bayam Derach, because the Yam is called the Derach. El Me'ata Matza Kan B'Shamayim, what if you find the bird's nest in the sky? That you don't have to do. Why? Derech Nesher B'Shamayim. The Gemara says that the sky is called Derech Nesher, but it's not called Stam Derech. Says the Raga Chavar, Tfilas HaDerech is a din in Derech. The Gemara says in Hulin that Shamayim is not called Derech, it's called what? Derech Nesher. Derech Nesher. So therefore, Tfilas HaDerech, which he's saying is right, is a very precise lashon. Tfilas HaDerech has to be a halachic derech for one to say Tfilas HaDerech. You wouldn't say Tfilas HaDerech when you're flying on an airplane. That's how you pask it. Halach l'maisa. Rav Avadi Yosef makes mention of this in a tshuva, if you turn back to page 3. And again, he says, I don't know that the Raga Chavar meant this halach l'maisa. It says in the top two lines, on Yechav Adas, this is Chelak Beis, Simen Chav Vav. I don't know that the Raga Chavar meant this l'maisa. Right? V'nira shagam linin tefilas haderecha ikir lahalacha sheyesh la'omer gam kishanosei abaviron, v'karuv lomar shaharoga chavi lo'amar kein el l'chadude be'amah. Raga Chavar was just showing how a person can think and learning. Walola inyan halacha lemaisa. I'm nobody to argue. Certainly on Chacham Avadi Yosef Shlita, he should be well. But I don't think, from my understanding of the Raga Chavar, what I've seen, both in his Chuvas and elsewhere, I don't know that that's true. I think the Raga Chavar did mean this halacha lemaisa. I don't think this was a story that was just brought to show how the Raga Chavar thought. His first thing he said in his Chuva about learning is we learn. Svara, not pilpul. This is not abstract pilpul. I think he meant halacha l'maisa. A person does not recite tefilas haderech because it's not a derech. The sky is not a derech. And he writes now in the footnotes that for reasons like this, the Raga Chavar is often not followed l'halacha. Because it's not normative halachic thinking. He quotes a Shas and Tshuvas Chalkos Yaakov, which we have on the previous page. Let's just look at that for a second, or maybe the next page, on page 4. Baruch Hashem. I own one piece of Chalkos Yaakov, and I was fortunate enough to own the right piece this time. In Chelek Beis Kuf Pei Zayin, he says, "V'im." This is the end of the tshuva. "V'im sheyadanu she'ein meshivin asari." Who are we to respond to the Raga Chavar? Who are prat erech kamoni? Someone like me, right? This is Dayan Breish, Chalkus Yaakov. He says, "Mamish nichlas kifnei anak." It's like walking before a giant. Mikol makom binogei lepsok halacha. Sorry for those of you who like this idea of passing right out of the Gemara and the Rambam, but I think it's accepted, he says, to follow what? To follow the Gemara, to follow the Shulchan Aruch, to follow the Poskim. And then he says in the left column, I heard from the Baal Chavatzelas HaSharon, Le'inyin Ha'ofos Balehei Atzbos, Sha'amr Li Bezeh Alashem. We're talking about this particular halachic matter that the Raga Chavar has a position on, and he said to me the following lashon, the Chavatzelas HaShalaron said to me, Hagon me Raga Chav, hu zocher mamish kol haTorah kula. He remembers kol haTorah kula. Aval lehalacha kasha lismuchala. But it's difficult to rely on him halacha lemaisa. Ve'ani mosif chaval al hador, shol hayaroi lekach leinos me'ora gadol halacha brura. And for whatever reason, he takes it to a higher level. For whatever reason, it wasn't meant that our door should be zocha to follow the Raga Chavar lehalacha. Maybe it's because he's too much bechinav lasid lavo, but we don't follow the Raga Chavar. If you just go back to Rav Avadia for one second, he concludes that footnote on the previous page by just adding in the third line, Kiyotzi b'zeh kasav Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, the Sridei Eish, writes in one of his svarim, Sheme olam lo nagu b'medina slita l'kvo halacha k'divrei Raga Chavar. Even in his time, even in his medina, it was not accepted practice to follow the Raga Chavar. Ki mefursam adavar shu halach b'nyari halacha b'darkar miyuchedes. He had a unique outlook in halacha v'lo nirta afilum ne'gedol eposkim. He didn't shake. He didn't move in the presence of any of the other Gedolei HaPoskim. No one else, was impressive to him. So to just discredit everyone else, again, in such a casual fashion, obviously the Raga Chavar had good reason for it, but it's difficult for us to be somech on him, la'alacha. There are other things the Raga Chavar did that seem to be non-alachic. Like, for example, on Tisha B'Av, or when his first wife passed away, and he's sitting Shiva, he sat and he was learning the whole day. So Rav Zemid brings down, it's not on the page in front of you, but someone asked him, how can you do such a thing? So the Rosh Hashanah responded, I read you Rav Zemid's words, Vaday Aveira Hizo, I'm sitting Shiva, it's Tisha B'Av, and I'm learning, you're asking a good question, how can I do this? It's an Aveira, you're right. Ukeshakabel Onesh Alshar Avonosai, Yanishuni Afal Avonse. No. When they punish me in the next world for all my other sins, they'll punish me for, what, for learning Torah? I'm like, now that sounds like a very radical thing. You can uproot halacha with that. That's what's brought down. But the reason the Rosh Hashanah has to be careful is because that wasn't the real reason he was learning. The halacha is, at least not necessarily with Tisha B'Av, but with regard to Avelis, the Yerushalmi says in the third parak of Moed Katan Halacha Hey, that a person who's lahat achar Torah, who's obsessed with Torah, can learn even during Avelis. So that's the real reason the Rosh Hashanah was learning. His response to people was, whatever, I'll burn for it, it's worth it. Right? But you have to know the Rosh Hashanah often had a different source for things that he was doing, even if it seemed to be not so halacha lemaisa. Bizman Ezer Shlomo Zalman Orbach says there's no one who fits that category of law at Achar Torah, but I think it's safe from what we've learned about the Rosh Hashanah to say that he certainly was worthy of being in that category as someone who was obsessed, truly obsessed with Torah. Okay, let's just see a little bit from the Rosh Hashanah on Chumash, just for 10 more minutes, and then we'll stop. The Rosh Hashanah on Chumash is also a halachic work. He read the Chumash, he took the stories of the Chumash, and that's why I'm going to bring you a lot of examples from Sefer Bereishis. I guess we'll start on page 11. As to how the Rosh Hashanah saw everything as halacha. Again, like Rav Teitz said in his intro to Bava Metzia, in Os Beis, the world, most people see length, width, and height. The Rosh Hashanah saw length, width, height, and halacha. Everything was in halacha. Everything had to tie into a Gemara. Truth is, I guess on some level, even the Svarno, if you go back to Svarno, you see that sometimes the Svarno does this often. It'll connect a pasuk in Torah to a particular Gemara. It always has to have a Maimer Chazal to support it. But the Rosh Hashanah was really an expert in this. Everything had to have a Talmudic source. Okay, let's just go through a few examples. Start on page 11. Okay, what happens? The wife of Lot turns into a pillar of salt. Vatabedi Ishto, she turns back. Vatihi Netziv Melach. And she turned into salt. Okay, according to some Rishonim, the city turned into salt. But most learned that she turned into salt. Why did she turn into salt? Why such a strange punishment? So the Rosh Hashanah says you need to have a halachic source for it. What's his source? Sha'avra al divrei navi. A person who violates the word of a navi is chayav misa bidei shamayim. The only way to make it clear that she died in a bidei shamayim way, like the Gemara in Sanhedrin Peites says, is to what? Is to kill her in some very unusual way. So the Rosh Hashanah says it's not right, like we're used to hearing. We know the Medrash, she turns to salt because of the whole incident with the salt. But it's more than that. She needs to die in an exceptional way in order to be Mekayim, this halacha that a person who violates the words of the Navi is Chayav Misa Bidei Shemayim. She needs to die in a way that's clear and evident to all that it was a Misa Bidei Shemayim. An example of how the Gemara is the Makor, so to speak, for the Rosh Hashanah. Okay, let's turn the page. Let's look at the next one. Another example. Also, same Parsha. Avram is going up to a Kedas Yitzchak, and he has the knife in his hand. Kind of, everyone's cheating and reading my note on the side. That's fine. Why is he holding the knife? A discussion, who was holding the wood? The pashas is, the wood was being carried and supported by Yitzchak, but not the knife. Why not the knife? Why couldn't Yitzchak hold the knife? Well, he'll say, because he's holding the wood. He didn't have a hand for the knife. Okay. Maybe, in pshat, we could talk like that. But the Rosh Hashanah sees this as a halachic sugya. A halachic sugya. So why couldn't he hold the knife? Because it's a machlokis, Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi, if the karban can be supported by the knife. Uvezeh pligi, gemara dilan, psachim daf samachvav, svirle da'asr laniach sakina al karban la'achar hektish, after the animal has been sanctified, you can't place the knife upon it, and the Yerushalmi holds that it's mutter. So Avram wanted to be what? Yotei l'chol adeos. So to play it safe, he held the knife. Again, you see how the Rosh Hashanah, everything is a sugya in halacha. Every detail of the Torah is based on halacha, is based on gemaras. Okay, let's look at another example. We'll go to page... Oh, and by the way, just one other thing. I didn't get a chance to photocopy it. We know that Avram is considered, the Medrash calls Avram, the Psikta, I think, calls Avram a Kohen. Really, he's the first Kohen Gadol. Right? He's considered the first Kohen Gadol. Why is that significant? From a halachic perspective, because there's a halachic problem with Yaakov, with Avram, come on in, with Avram slaughtering Yitzchak. What's the problem? When he kills Yitzchak, he's killing his own son, which means he's going to be an Onan. An Onan can't offer karbanos. A Kohen who's an Onan can't offer karbanos. A Kohen Gadol is makriv Onan. Kohen Gadol can bring karbanos even as an Onan. So the only way for Avram to be able to kill his son, become an Onan, and still be allowed to perform this karban is what? Is if he's the Kohen Gadol. So again, he takes a medrash, which is sounds more of like a drush idea that he's a Kohen Gadol, and he has the ability to call chavracha, he's able to bless people, right? And he turns it into a halachic sugya. Okay, another couple of just other short examples to bring out this idea. Let's look on page 13. The brothers come to Yosef, right? He recognizes them. Vehem lo hikiru. So we know what Chazal say. Rashi says his facial appearance has changed. He has a beard. Right, says the Ragat Shavar, it's a halachic sugya. V'heim lo ikiru, they're following halacha. Why didn't they recognize him? Ayin ksubis, yivamis, bamitzia. You have to understand, these were little notes that he wrote. And the footnotes here are all from Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher and his son who worked to what? To mevar the words of the Ragat Shavar, to make sense of these Ma'ar Makomos. You should see his writings in the Rambam, they're unfathomable. It's just Ma'ar Makom after Ma'ar Makom after Ma'ar Makom. At least with Chumash, you feel it gives you a couple little sources. You can maybe figure it out. And he gives you a few words once in a while. So here he gives away at least one piece of the puzzle. You have all those Ma'ar Makomos to work on your own to figure out what he's hinting to. Right? He's making reference to the Chazals. He grew a beard, etc. Uve emes yesh lomar. Dinei mevur chagiga dafta zayin. Aser listaka b'melech. A person's not allowed to stare in the face of a melech. So why didn't they recognize him? Because they could hardly look at him. I don't have the S to the rest of the quote. But you get the idea. They couldn't look at Yosef. They were following the halacha. The halacha is you can't look the king in the face. So out of respect for the king, they didn't look at him. Because they didn't get a good look at him, they didn't recognize him. Again, just another example of halachic sugya. Okay, let's do two more. One more from the Tzafnas Paneach on Chumash, and one more from Rav Zevin. Okay, look how even the opinions of the Gaonim, right, were significant to the Ragat Shavar. In Tzafnas Paneach and Parshas Vayechi, Yosef goes to visit his father, and he brings along his children. So why is he bringing his children? Well, read the Pesukim, they're getting a bracha, it's the end of his life. He says, no, it's a fulfillment of a halacha, a unique halacha that's found in the Shiltos. The Shiltos paskins, in Parshas Emor, the Ein Lavakir Cholo Yechidi, a person should not perform the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim alone. Okay, in the footnote here he says, he quotes the language of the Shiltos, he says really it's an Achrayimos, but there is such an idea, and there's a lot of discussion, lehalacha, you know, do we follow this opinion? Do we follow the Shiltos? You shouldn't do Bikur Cholim alone, what's it based on, what's the idea? But apparently, Yosef HaTzadik held like the Shiltos. He felt that he can't do Bikur Cholim alone, so very much bedafka, v'yikach, ha-shnei banav, imo. He takes his children along. The fact that they get a brach is, you know, tangential in the eyes of the Ragat Shavar. But first and foremost is again that fourth dimension which he lives with, which is the halacha. Okay, one more. Yeah, please.
Does he think that it works that
that was Yosef?
Like Yosef, or?
Right. So right. So then you get into, right. Meaning, what was it that the Shiltos passed like Yosef? Was it that Yosef was really choshev for the Shiltos, or do we say in a more abstract way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu guides a tzaddik who's you know neshama is in the right place that he's not gonna come to do an avera? And if this is in fact an avera, so Hashem put this idea in Yosef's head, take along your sons. Was Yosef actively thinking, I'm going to mekayim this idea of not doing Bikur Cholim alone? It's very hard to...
Was the Gemara in Chagiga saying that you're not allowed to look at...
Well, I mean, is that right? What's the cause? What's the effect? Right, so that's a good question. The Gemara, very often, the sources he's bringing are not the sources the Gemara is bringing. Right. Meaning, he's not going to just quote us the Gemara Chagiga where the Gemara says the reason the brothers didn't look at you, that's his Chiddush. Yeah. That's the Emes Yishlom, where he quotes the other Chazals first. He says, my Chiddush is, but that's everything. Everything is a halachic matter to him. And again, whether or not the people were doing it, when we say Avram kept Kol HaTorah Kula, was he doing? Did Avram think that this is a kiyum of you know mitzvah saseh X? That's hard to you could kind of go both ways on that. There's definitely sources, I think, from my limited knowledge that you can argue in both directions for that. Okay, let's do one more, just one more page, page 15. The Ragat Shavar, again back to Ishim Vishitos from Rav Zevin. Very interesting. Look even how you know the coming of Mashiach. Right? When we talk about a halachic man, it's a moment that's being described by the Navi Yishai in Perek Yud Aleph. It's just a very pleasant moment. And the Ragat Shavar is busy being done le halacha. Right? It's an amazing way of thinking. Look what he says. He says in that middle paragraph, V'sirtut acher midmuso ha-talmudit shel machaber. Let me give you just one more, another line about the Talmudic perspective of the Rugged Shower. B'sarav b'yichud ha-achronim anu pogshim b'kam mekomos perushim mekros lefi darko. B'tshuvos ein l'chora makom l'zeh v'af al pikhein hu mishali psukim u'mvarim lefi halacha. Look how the Rugged Shower takes psukim in Torah and even in Navi, because I showed you mostly sources in Torah. Let's look at one source in Navi. Minikudas apshat perushav kemuvan ketzad rechokim. From a pshat level, it doesn't seem that that's what the Navi was driving at, but look how the Rugged Shower transformed it into a halachic matter. They're very interesting, unique approach. This is in Parak Yud Aleph. The Pasuk describes that when Mashiach comes, you have all sorts of wild animals that normally don't interact, and they're gonna be living together, and everyone's gonna be dwelling together, and a little child is gonna come, Venar Katan is gonna come, and he's gonna lead them, he's gonna walk with them. So he says, that's right, Nar Katan. Dafka, says the Rugged Shower, Omer Machaber. Nar Katan. Why? Shekein Gadol Aser Lanhigam. A Gadol would be prohibited from leading this mixture of animals. Why? Shrei Zev Im Keves is what is climb. V'chein Shara Zivugim, and the other combinations of animals that are described in this pasuk is climb. So most of us are thinking, oh, when Mashiach comes, right, that's not going to matter. And not that, okay, whether or not the halachas are still going to apply, I'm not saying one way or the other. But you see it as just a beautiful moment where everyone's, right, there's world peace and there's unity and dangerous animals are dwelling with, you know, their enemy animal, right? And the Rugged Shower says, no, you have to look beyond that. The Nar Katan, there's a young child's going to escort these animals because that's what the halacha would demand. And he brings the Rambam and he brings this as a sugya in Hilchus Kayim. So again, this was the Rugged Shower's, you know, Torah approach, or approach rather to deciphering the psukim of the Torah. Just one last point, we're done with the Mar Makomos for now, but just one last point, I didn't have a chance to give you an example of this, but the Mor Nevuchim, which was written by the Rugged Shower's Rebbe, the Rambam, right, was written as a Jewish philosophical work. Not for the Rugged Shower. The Rugged Shower went through, and it's one of the most remarkable things that we have. We were, Baruch Hashem, able to save these writings. The Rugged Shower on the Mor Nevuchim goes line by line of the Rambam's philosophy and turns it into halacha. He's mitzayin a halachic source for every statement the Rambam makes in the Mor Nevuchim. Because again, that was that's how he saw the world. Everything was a halachic work. Rav Teitz, in his, again, that introduction to Bava Metzia, in Os Yod, he talks about, again, the chiddush of that. What a chiddush to take, the Torah, okay, at least the Torah is meant to be horah. There's supposed to be psak interwoven even with the actions of the, you know, of the avos and of the shvatim, etc. But to take the Rambam writing, a Jewish philosophical work, and to transform that entire thing into a halachic work was a very big chiddush. Okay, I think we'll stop here for today. Next week we'll talk about the Rugged Shower's worldview, which is obviously related to this, and how beyond the sources, he was able to see the whole world through Torah. Some very good stories on tap for next week. I thank you all for coming. Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom.